for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We are back in the building. Yes, sir. Another week, another opportunity to talk shop. So it's time to get that cracking. We got the Seattle Seahawks on the docket. So naturally, we're going to have Seahawks ESPN NFL Nation reporter Brady Henderson coming in. My guy right there. Run TMC. You know that's a weekly thing. So we got Chris Sanders on and we got Connor Newt.
What's up, TD?
Yes, sir. Riding along with me on this journey that we call the Titans 2025 season. Lord have mercy, 1-9. What are you? All right. Well, I guess, yeah, let's start there. 1-9 record. You look at this team, it's not really, there are no chances of them making the playoffs. I'm not even going to say there's not really. There are no chance. It won't happen. So, when you look at all this, what's left to prove? What's left to accomplish in this season? And to me, right off the bat, it's Cam Ward, the development.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is important is looking at last week. Obviously, it was a loss. It was a loss that was frustrating for the team. But I think you need to look at Cam Ward and just his performance in the game. Yeah, of course, there were throws that were off. But I think overall, if you look at the decisiveness that he played with, it was a little bit different. Mm. And just, you know, some numbers to give you and stats, you know, they don't show a lot, everything. They show a lot, but not everything. 2.9 seconds per throw is what his average is. He was at 2.6 in this past game. What do you think of that?
It shows kind of the struggles the offensive line is going through this season, I think. Especially Kevin Zeitler, I think, has been not as advertised. And maybe that's to be expected when you have a player of that age. He's, correct me if I'm wrong, TD, 36.
Yeah.
He's an aging player. And he's a former All-Pro, but you expect a little bit more production out of it. J.C. Latham has been kind of the story of the week as he got three false start penalties called on him in the Texans game. And it's just been kind of a, I don't want to say immaturity thing, because I think he's a very mature individual and I think he's a very talented player. I think it's just a matter of him piecing it all together and showcasing he's worthy of the high value pick that they picked him at.
So yeah,
I think as a whole, the offensive line has been better this year than they were last year. Look, I understand the low bar, but I think it's just a growing pains thing. Maybe you, not that they haven't had enough time to gel because we're over halfway through the season, but I think it's just something that they have maybe not as high a ceiling you were hoping for.
Yeah, and so like bringing it back to Cam Ward, really what this shows is as far as the seconds, the fractions of a second, it being faster, it shows more decisiveness. And I think when you look at this, that's something that this coaching staff and that Cam has been looking for. The ability to figure out where he's going with the football faster and get it out and avoid the sacks. And I think that's the kind of progress that you want. In addition to that, I think when you look at some of the throws, I mean, that drop shot to Chigakonkwo was a beautiful throw, the 39-yarder that set up the touchdown late in the game. And ironically, it came in a moment where Calvin Ridley, he went down. They didn't have Chim DK. They didn't have Alec Ironman.
Yeah.
So they had to use a little more 12 personnel. Now, this team, right, 11 personnel, three receiver sets, they've used that more than any other team in the league. Then you have three receivers go down in one game, and you have Mason Kinsey, you know, who's thrust into action, and they had to adjust. And I thought Mike McCoy, Nick Holtz, they did a good job explaining and crediting guys like Chigakonkwo. That route, that play, Okonkwo never executed that play with that personnel before.
Right.
Now, obviously, you don't want he and Van Jefferson in the same spot like that. It's a play that Okonkwo, he ran the wrong route.
Yeah.
But he ended up being in the right place at the right time, so to speak, and Ward saw him, and he got rid of the ball, and it was a huge play, and I just love the way that he was able to haul that in. But it goes back to the ability to kind of adjust. I think this game, even though it was a loss, it showed something from this coaching staff. And the reason why I'll say that is because the ability to adjust on the fly, right? And when you have three receivers going down and you're a team that uses three receiver set more than half, more than three quarter of the time, because three quarter is 75 and they use it 78. So it's a little more, the ability to adjust to that. But here's the thing, folks, that doesn't take away all of the bad play, right? This wasn't a pretty game. There were plenty of mistakes. And for me, the big thing, to get it back to what you were saying about Kevin Zeitler, about J.C. Latham, about this offensive line, they're last in the league in running the football.
Mm-hmm.
They're averaging 78 yards rushing per game.
Yeah, and I think some of that is the running backs as well. They have not.
It's definitely on the backs.
But the offensive line, too.
The O-line is on the receivers also. In fact, I had a nice, I guess you could call it back and forth with Mike McCoy about this on Wednesday. Here's what he had to say when I asked him what was going wrong with the run game.
That varies from week to week. You know, I think there's a couple plays that against Houston, and the first time we played them, we ran, that were really good plays that we ran a couple of times. This week, you ran them. They might have played them different. You know, one of those plays, you know, 51 played it different than he did the past couple of weeks, or the first time we played him. That's from, you know, game planning and looking at things. So he took a couple of things. So the ups and downs of the run game, that varies from week to week. Whether it's, there's a number of reasons. You could say, is it a track of a back? You know, did he not press the line of scrimmage too much? Did he cut too fast? Was there a missed block? And then I know sometimes we don't want to hear this, but sometimes someone trips. I mean, I've had a lineman come back before and come back and say, run it again. I tripped. So there's a number of things. It could be a receiver. It could be a receiver not going and blocking, you know, a down safety or a nickel off the edge. And then sometimes it's scheme. You know, there'll be a time where we run into a bad look. And then there's a time where we should check out of a play that doesn't happen. So there's when things don't work, there could be a different answer for every single play. It's not just saying, hey, we didn't do this or we did this, you know.
I guess a better way to ask it is there a consistent thing that continues to show up that keeps you guys from being able to run the football successfully?
I wouldn't say it. Like I would stick with what I just told you. It's different for every play. There's different reasons why. Whether you're not blocking a certain linebacker or you're not getting off a block. I mean, I go on and on for why plays don't work.
I got time, so.
You got to have to watch every play and say, this is why it worked. Because you can go back and watch the exact same play, and it looks the exact same, and it's a 7-yard gain. And there's other times it's a zero. And there's times where, hey, do you get beat? Some defense is going to win sometimes, too. So, like I said, I could give you 50 reasons for why a play won't work.
So, as you see, not really any set answer, but there is something in talking to some of the O-linemen. I talked to J.C. Latham. I talked to Lloyd Cushenberry, as well as Peter Skoronski, about the run game and some of the things that are making it more difficult to run the football and giving them trouble. And Latham didn't necessarily buy into it, but Cushenberry and Skoronski, they're like, early in the game, you're getting run stuffs. It's harder to go back to the run when you're getting stuffed early. And it can influence the play calling, but the confidence also. And I thought that was interesting because it's like, remembering the glory days for this organization, 2019 to 2021, you know, you could stop the run, but Arthur Smith was going to keep calling it. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it's a lot different when you got Derrick Henry, a mutant, a Martian in the backfield. But the stick-to-itiveness, the dedication to the run game, even when it's not working, knowing that all it takes is just one little thing to go and it'll pop, and that 22 yards off of 8 carries turns into 100 yards off of 9 carries, that's the plus about having a Derrick Henry. So, just to drop a little draft talk in there, Notre Dame happens to have a running back that I think.
Do you love him?
I don't love, but I love having an impact player in the backfield. So if I'm the Titans and, you know, there's an opportunity to trade down, I know this team needs receivers. I know this team needs cornerbacks. I know this team, they need everything for the most part, pass rusher. But if you can manufacture an extra pick and add Love from Notre Dame, that could be something. But let's keep it more on this year. And when you're looking at this year, Tony Pollard, every week I'm going to tweet that he runs hard. It's a weekly operation. But I feel like there's a little bit of fall off with him.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's shelf life is kind of always a topic when it comes to running backs. They have probably the quickest in the entire sport of football. A running back's prime is probably 5 to 6 years. And we caught the tail end of it last year with Tony Pollard, and it feels like it's taken a bit of a step back this year. Tajay Spears, I think, is starting to ascend while Pollard is descending. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tajay Spears can be the same level of impact player that Tony Pollard is, but I think he can be a pretty good third down back in this league.
Yeah.
And he's proving that. Although last game he was, what, 3 carries for less than a yard or something like that?
Yeah, and how many times did you have to see him redirect in the backfield?
Right. So
that's an issue.
That is a problem. But I think on the Tony Pollard front, you're kind of just seeing the downward trend of a running back. That's just kind of how it works. Obviously, there are extreme examples in this league of guys that sustain greatness for a long, long time. Your former running back in Baltimore is doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Chubb was doing that for a little bit with the Texans. He still is a little bit.
Saquon.
Barkley, yep. You know, Jonathan Taylor, he's a younger guy, but he's hitting that 28, 29 age.
He's hitting that peak.
Yeah, that's probably about the ceiling. So it's a perfect example of what shelf life looks like for a running back.
I think, you know, Pollard is probably gone. They save, I think it's like $7 million getting him out of there. But they have to figure out what they're going to do running back-wise, because I don't think you could go into the season with Tajay Spears, Julius Chestnut, and Khalil Mullins. I think you need something else. So we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, then you move to the receiver group, and we talked about, you know, them having to shuffle in the game. Well, now Chimere Dike, he practiced on Wednesday, you know what I mean? But then you look at Alec Iremanner, he was out. So what are they going to do on that side of things? They did sign James Proche to the active roster, you know, to the 53-man from the practice squad. Could this be a week that Xavier Restrepo gets pulled up? I don't know. It's definitely possible. You know, when asked about that, Cam Ward, he had a big smile on his face. So there's just going to be a lot of shuffling, and I think that's something. You look at the defense, you know, just to flip it to that real quick, I think really I want to spotlight Kevin Winston Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and you watch that, like – The All-22, man, this dude is all over the place. And I think, you know, when you look at this, it's his first, like, real start. He looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be something that's going to be a part of this defense for a while. Whoever comes in, hopefully they can continue to highlight him. And then you also look at the second level of the defense. Cedric Gray has continued to play outstanding football. And this is a dude that just, I don't know, man. He just has a way of finding the football. And then you move to the front. Jeffrey Simmons, Arden Key had an impact. You see Jahi Ward playing. So this deep, they have players at all levels, you know, and that's the thing that's a little frustrating when you see where this record is, because the defense is they're good and they're solid. Let's be clear. They're solid. But I think with some more complimentary football, I think they could be better. And that's why you have a Jeffrey Simmons after the game saying, hey, we're better than that team. You can't tell me we're not better. We just need to play more complementary football. And then you have, you know, Arden Key talking about the way some of the young guys, maybe not necessarily in the locker room, a bunch of them, but there are some in there that apparently they're not taking to the advice, the gems, the nuggets that the old heads are dropping. And that that could be an issue, right? When you have a Jeffrey Simmons telling you something and, you know, you huff and puff about it. And I saw this in the locker room, right? I saw it, okay? There was a conversation in Simmons and Latham. And, you know, Simmons challenged him. Hey, play with more effort. This is lazy. And Latham, naturally, he didn't like it. But, you know, here's the thing. You can't take it personal. You just got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and Latham, you know, what's probably frustrating to so many people is that he's so talented, but you're not seeing the results match that talent consistently. Mm. There are times, you know, and obviously he didn't allow any pressures in this Texans game. They helped him an awful lot. So, you know, let's kind of like balance it out. But Latham is going to have to at some point show the player that he is.
Yeah.
And this is a guy, and he's an interesting study because this is a guy, and we're talking about it in the media room. He went to IMG, right? And then he went to Alabama. What does he know about losing? He probably lost more games this year in the past 2 years than he lost in his whole high school and college career. So it's got to be tough for him.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be something to watch, just how he adjusts to that. So, yeah, I mean, look, 1-9, you know, we're going into week 12. This team obviously has had the bye week, and, you know, Seattle's coming to town. And, yeah, this one looks like it could be a massacre. So we'll just see how that whole situation works. I want to get into, you know, this a little bit later with Brady Henderson when he comes on. But in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC, Chris Sanders.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD. And as the lights dim and the music fades, where are we going? To the Boston Garden. And now, starting at small forward for your Boston Celtics. Out of the University of Charlotte, number 30, Cedric Cornbread Maxwell.
And now, starting for the Los Angeles Lakers, Bob McAdoo.
We're going to get you some new names, man.
Dude, when's the last time I said rotation? No, I didn't, man. That's not true, man. We don't say every name in the book, man. I'm looking at dictionaries. I'm looking at everything.
We ain't saying you ain't heard Cornbread Maxwell before, but I had
man. That's in your rotation too, man.
Nah, I called you that twice. This is the second time. But anyhow, I want to get into this with you because obviously, if you go back, you watch that game in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're driving, the Titans, that is, and you know. Cam Ward scrambles to his right. I don't know if he needed to spot up and have a more direct drop shot to Mason Kinsey. Ooh. But if you remember the route, he looked inside. First off, I've seen routes, you know, where you had that post corner. You know what I mean?
Right,
you want to look inside. But there was no man there for him to look inside to try to fake out. Like, because everybody went with Iron Manor on the clear route. So just help me, from your perspective, understand what you saw on that and who that miss was on.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. As a wide receiver, you got to understand, first of all, the coverage. You got to understand if they're playing zone and they're playing man. If they're playing man, that's when you want to use the extra move. That's when you want to use your eyes because you want to get the guy off the spot. But when you have a guy and their space is not there and they're in the zone, your job is just to get to that spot. And then I think that, in my opinion, I know everybody's looking at Cam Ward to say it was off on him, but I think it was Kinsey because you really don't even need that move. You just need to be in a spot to where the quarterback expects you to be there.
Exactly. And to me, it was just extra sauce added to the route that you don't need to. Like, it's like putting A1 on a steak. Like, you don't do that, right? You know, when you go to a good steak shop, you don't put A1 on the steak, right?
Right.
All he had to do was get to the spot. And when he turned inside, that killed his momentum of being able to go outside. And then also in addition to that, you know, he had to reroute himself and turn to locate the ball, and it just made it a harder catch than it should have been.
Yeah, it's kind of. I like the analogy you make with the food, but just talk about, just imagine going to your favorite rib place and it already has barbecue sauce on it, but then you put an extra thing on barbecue sauce. You really don't need it. But see, as a wide receiver, you know, I tell my receivers this all the time. I may tell them a technique to use your eyes and, you know, lie with your eyes, all those things. We got to understand that if it's zone, if it's a zone coverage, you're just running, you're just using that technique on air because they're not even paying attention to it. When you're using your eyes and lie with your eyes and doing the extra move, you're trying to get the defense back's hips locked away from where you're going. You don't need to do it when it's zone. You just got to get to the spot and make sure you're there where the quarterback is expecting you to be.
Nah, that's without a doubt a fact. So when you look at this, right, you had Calvin Ridley first play of the game. And it is the thing, right? The Titans, even when they're right, things go wrong. It's such a darn shame, right? Because they finally did not run the ball on the first offensive play.
Right.
And it resulted in – and they went to play action and a quick pop, and it resulted in Ridley fractured fibula. What do you make of this receiver core left over? Because you got Ridley, Iomanner, DK was out, but he did return to practice on Wednesday. What do you make of this receiving core? What's left?
You know, I mean, it's tough because you really don't have a bona fide bona fide number one. I mean, I know we're Streppel. I think he's going to play this week. But here's the good thing about it. Here's the bad part about it. Here's the good part about it. The bad part about it is you have your top guys out. The good part about it is you have young guys that get to show their talent. Everybody keeps screaming Restrepo. Everybody keeps screaming that. So this is a time where he can go out and prove himself that he can play in this league. So even though it's a bad situation and we don't have those other wide receivers there, these other wide receivers are auditioning for positions for the Tennessee Titans or also for other teams that might look at him.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody is screaming Restrepo, and I get it.
Yeah.
I'm screaming James Proche.
Yo, right, and man, if you remember, say that again.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I'm screaming James Proche because now he was signed to the active roster.
True.
But if you remember going back to training camp, this was one of the outstanding performers in camp.
Absolutely.
And I think when you look at him, you got the ability to play inside, outside, and he gives you return ability. And this dude is a big play receiver when given opportunities. Now, I'm not sitting here calling him Tim Brown or anybody, so let's you know, pump the brakes here. But what do you make of him and getting the opportunity to – I'll pull a name on you now. You know, what do you make of him getting the opportunity to go out there and make it happen?
You know, I watched him because my son played at SMU, and he's at SMU. And this guy, I love the way he runs routes. I love what he does at the top of the route. But he's got those big, strong hands so he can make those tough catches in space.
Yes.
He catches the ball in space in tight windows. And when you have a quarterback that's struggling a little bit and the ball might not be where you want it to be, he has those big hands and those soft hands to make those plays. But then another guy that we're really not talking about is Van Jefferson. Even though Van Jefferson's been in the league for a while, he still needs some proving. Yes, he won a Super Bowl. Right. Yes, he's made some plays, but I think with Van Jefferson, he can show that he can be consistent each and every week. I know he scored a touchdown last week, but we want to see that every week, you know, to where he can be a consistent wide receiver.
He's a very good route runner. I really noticed that at the Senior Bowl, and it just stood out to me. And I said, man, I like this kid, so I'm glad you brought him up. Let's look at the tight end situation, right? And I'm laughing because listen to this. So – I don't know if anyone has mentioned it, but if you go back and watch that Chigakonkwo 39-yard reception,
he
and Van Jefferson, they were in the same area.
Yeah.
Chig ran the wrong route. But,
I'm glad
you know,
he did.
They connected, and it was a big-time play. When you look at that catch and how he was able to just, like, you know, let that fall right in his – and just the way he hauled it in.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing that I love about him is he just tracked the ball down well. I mean, you look at some guys like that kind of stopped running and diving for it. He just ran through the pass. When I say ran through the pass, he ran through it to where it looks like him threw a dime. But actually, he was throwing it to a spot to where it allowed Chig to show his speed, show his acceleration, and show him run through the football as opposed to trying to dive for it every single time. So I love what he did. I know everybody's talking about, you know, Cam putting it on the money. Cam threw a ball to a spot but it allowed the athleticism of Chig to go and get it and run through the ball. That's what made it so special.
And that is something that you don't always see in receivers, right? The ability to stay running fast while tracking the ball, because so many times you see him slow down a little bit. So I thought that was really good. And, you know, he didn't necessarily have late hands. He had late forearms, because that's what he caught the ball with. But still, a tremendous catch.
Yeah, and I remember Les Steck would always tell me, a lot of reason why a lot of receivers slow down is because they turn their head. When you turn your head, you slow down. He ran through it. He ran to the spot, and that's why he was able to accelerate to the football. And, I mean, I know it was a dime by Cam, but, man, him tracking that ball and going to get it was pretty dope.
He has said that it's different nowadays where there's a lot of – there's some huffing and puffing when the vets talk to the younger guys. What do you make of that as opposed to how it was before where, you know, the guys would, you know, be told something by the old heads and they're like, hey, I'm just going to get right.
Yeah, it's funny because this generation is a little different, and this is my opinion. Sometimes a lot of young guys don't really like to be coached by other guys, and you just don't want that to happen. I don't know if you remember this. They did a special on the Houston Texans. And this younger guy kept making mistakes, but the older guy kept telling him, we can't have no mistakes. The guy's like, man, I got it. I'm good. He said, well, you ought to understand, you're undrafted. I'm undrafted. We don't have that much time that every play counts. If we don't make the plays, we're out of here. But the young guy still wasn't listening because he wanted to do it his way. And I think that sometimes a lot of great athletes come in, a lot of great athletes come in, but then they think they have all the answers. But what makes the great players, the young players, that they're willing to listen to the older guys? Why? Because they've done it. When I came in, I had Webster Slaughter, Haywood Jeffries, guys that actually done it. So, man, I'm soaking up everything they tell me because these guys have done it before. So I just think that when he said young guys are huffing and puffing, I just think that sometimes they've just been uncoachable.
Yeah, it's like the sense of urgency is eternal. And you know, I'm here at Titans practice, and you talk about one of the young guys that really has taken the guidance and direction is this guy I'm about to say was up to right here, and that's Kevin Winston Jr., the safety. What's up, man? How you doing? What's up, coach?
Tell him I beat him on a D route.
what would you do to him? You hit him with the lean to the post and then go to the corner or the reverse?
I give it a hand off the line of scrimmage, light with my eyes, and then let's go eat. Touchdown.
Yeah, there you go right there. That's how you got to do it, man. I love it. I love it. And I think when you look at this, right, as this season is starting to wind down, you know, how would you approach this as a veteran guy? Like, how would you approach, like, the way that you need to go out there and put forth your best effort, your best film on tape?
See, this is where you're going to start to see where real leadership kicks in. Anybody can be a leader when it's going well, but can you be a leader when it's not going well? So, you know, I love what Jeffrey Simmons said. I love the passion. I love that he's playing well, and it just shows you that he wants to be a true leader, that even in the bad times, you know, I'm still trying to win the game. And that just shows you the leadership. And he's preparing like they're going to the Super Bowl because that's the type of guy that he is. So when you're seeing your older guys doing that, then those younger guys are going to follow suit, because the real leadership is going to show up when things are going bad. And I love the expression and how Simmons expressed himself after the game, that we got to do this. I'm tired of sugarcoating. You know, I'm tired of, you know, having moral victories, but we got to get it done. So even though they're 1-9, they're still, you know, you still have your leaders still trying to fight to get some wins, because you want to still, even though you're not going to the playoffs and even though you're not going to the Super Bowl, you still want to have a good taste in your mouth when you leave the season and then come back next season.
Yeah, and you know, really, there's this thing, right? It's called pride. Above all else, you're playing at very least for that, you know, and I think that's what matters. What's up, fellas? All right. Hey, man. 1986. That's my bad. Mike Bogonzi. He's a Red Sox fan.
He saw my Mets gear. Tell him to hire me, man.
Hey, listen, man. You got to come out here and hang out and be at practice.
I'm just kidding, man.
No, they need to. They need to hire you. They need to hire you. But to your point, though, pride is something that's very important that you got to play for. And, I mean, at the end of the day, as a man, you want to – put the best effort into whatever it is you take part in, you know. And
Can I say something on that real quick? You know, you remember back in the day when we used to play football, right? Did we ever, when we played in the street, when we played in the grass, when we played on the, you know, at school, we wasn't getting a paycheck. The reason why we played, we just love football. So even though the record is not what you want to be, you're still going to go play hard. Why? Because you love football. And I think that if you love football, you're going to play hard because this is what you dreamt about. Because, you know, as a young kid, you want to be in the NFL. You dreamt about playing in the NFL. Why would it stop you from playing hard even if your record's not good? You should just love football and play 100 miles per hour.
Hey, man, listen, you won't get any disagreements from me about that. Absolutely. And I mean, I'm going to agree with you, even though I heard a song about Kiss from a Rose, and they thought that you sang, and I had to explain to them that this isn't the guy I do radio with. It's Seal.
See, man, you're like Lionel Richie. That's what you're
like. Hello?
Is it me you're looking for? Man, get off my phone.
This is Jefferson, and I'm talking with TD.
After all the Jets are in the boxes.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. Hey, man, we had to get a little Jimmy on here. You know what I mean? Got to get a little Jimmy on here because the Titans are playing the Seahawks, so we got the Seattle theme music. And that being said, we're going to bring in ESPN NFL Nation Seahawks reporter, my guy, my dog, my man, Brady Henderson. Brady, what's going on?
Well, TD, thanks for having me, first of all. And also, it's great to get a break from the Nirvana because, you know, everybody who, like, thinks of music in Seattle, the first band that comes to mind is Nirvana. So you always, like, on when the TV, you know, broadcasts of games, play the music going in and out, it's always Nirvana. So it's great to give Jimmy some love. Jimmy needs more love.
Yeah, man. I mean, for heaven's sake, they have a park named after him. And
they do.
It's like, how could you not associate Seattle with Jimi Hendrix? But one of the other things you always associate Seattle with is defense. So let's start on that side of it because, I mean, when you look at this defense, Mike McDonald, what he's done, I mean, the guys on the interior, we'll start with them, Leonard Williams, Byron Murphy. How have you seen just that front itself kind of revolve around those guys and obviously DeMarcus Lawrence as well?
Yeah, I think this defense, it really is, it's really built around the front, not necessarily schematically, but just success-wise, it really starts there. And, you know, if you look at the blitz rates, you know, they get quite a bit of pressure on quarterbacks without blitzing. At least that's the case this year. And I don't think McDonald, even when he was in Baltimore, was ever a real heavy blitz guy, but it's been less so this year. And I think that's twofold. One is that they've had a lot of injuries in the back end of their defense. So I think McDonald has just not wanted to, you know, further put stress on a secondary that, you know, every week has one or two backup players in there. The other part of it is he hasn't really had to because, you know, their front four has been so good at generating pressure on their own. And it's Leonard Williams, who at 32 years old continues to just defy age. And, you know, he had a great season last year and he's having another great season this year. DeMarcus Lawrence is another, you know, what, 11th year veteran who is playing a pretty big time role for them on the edge and is a real physical presence, especially in the run game. But he also adds quite a bit to their pass rush. And, you know, Byron Murphy is having the second year breakout that a lot of people just figured he would after what was kind of a nondescript rookie season, I think it's fair to say. And then you throw in, you know, guys like Jaron Reed. He's actually on IR right now, but yeah. You know, he's also a big part of what they do. And they, you know, Uchenna Nwosu is another really physical edge guy opposite Lawrence. So you've got a lot of players up front. And, you know, the old cliche about how, you know, the defense starts up front, it really is true in Seattle.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that because the ability to rush four and drop seven, that helps so much in coverage. But then on top of that, and we're going to skip over the linebackers because I'm going to go to the secondary because one of my favorite players in the league is Devin Witherspoon. And when you have guys like he and Reek Woolen there in the secondary, obviously, you know, it makes it a lot easier to do things. But you marry that to that pressure up front that they generate and good things happen. I'm curious, though, because I keep hearing that there's a good chance that Reek Woolen won't be back next year. What is going on there?
Yeah, I think there's – well, yeah, we could talk a lot about this one, but – Yeah, I think part of it is the fact that he is so talented, and yet he's been so up and down for, you know, his first 3.5 seasons in the NFL. And I have kind of gotten the sense that it's just a trust thing of, you know, this guy's so talented, and there has been enough good football, in some cases really good football, on tape that he's probably going to get paid a lot of money in free agency. And it would not shock me if he gets a deal north of 15, maybe even $20 million a year in free agency. And I kind of have gotten the sense from the Seahawks standpoint that I just don't know if they really trust him to, you know, to really just lock in and really bring it, you know, once he's already gotten paid. And he's just kind of been up and down. And, you know, to his credit, I think he has played a lot better of late. Really the last, I would say, what, 3 or 4 games, he's really played a lot better. And he has, you know, Mike McDonald has talked about, you know, the need for Wolin to just stay locked in on a play-in and play-out basis. And I think, you know, he probably runs into an issue that other really good cornerbacks run into, which is that, you know, when you go, you know, stretches of games without getting the ball thrown your way, it's easy to kind of lose focus. And I think he's done that a few times earlier this year. I mean, he really got victimized on the final drive of the opening game against San Francisco, you know, allowed a long catch to Ricky Pearsall, and then really misplayed a ball in the end zone for what ended up being the game winning touchdown. You know, he's not the most physical tackler. And so that's, I think, another part of the equation, which is, I don't know if he's a great fit for kind of the style of cornerback that Mike McDonald wants. You know, when you think of, you know, those Baltimore, you know, defenses and those Baltimore cornerbacks, he's not that, you know, physical kind of guy. But that said, I think some team's going to give him a whole lot of money. I've just, for a while, have had some serious doubts about whether or not it's going to be Seattle. But to his credit, you know, I'm sure he heard all the noise about possibly being traded, and I suppose that could have had an effect on him in terms of, you know, being kind of a wake up call to him. But whether it was that or something else, he's definitely played better over the last month. I would say a lot better.
Nice. And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson. Brady, Nick Emenwori, he was one of those guys that was like every draft Nick's crush. Well, what have you seen from him in that, especially in that nickel spot?
Well, he's basically become an every down player for them. And I want to say it's, you know, 4 of the last 5 games, he's played over 92% of the snaps. And the exception was, you know, the blowout of the Commanders on, what was that, Sunday Night Football, where, you know, if that game is closer, he probably plays, you know, as much as he had been. So it's interesting that, you know, I guess nowadays teams, typically your nickelback is in there on what, 2/3 of the plays, 70% of the plays.
Yeah.
He's in there basically every down, and it doesn't matter if offenses are throwing, you know, 11 personnel out there, or even last week against the Rams, it was a lot of 13 personnel. So whether it's, you know, passing formations or run heavy formations, he's out there. And it just speaks to how versatile he is as a guy who, you know, he lit up the combine with the, you know, 4.3-something 40 and this crazy vertical. And he's a big guy. You know, he's built, I mean, he's a big, tall safety who's got obviously a lot of speed, really good change of direction. I think he even played some cornerback in college before moving to safety. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is he can do a lot, and that's why you're seeing him play as much as he is.
Ernest Jones, the 4th, former Titan. He was traded for a 4th-round pick. We ended up being Gunnar Helm, in essence, the Texas tight end. Is he what you would describe as like the sergeant, the traffic cop there on that defense in the center of it?
Yeah, he is, and he is their green dot guy. He is the signal caller, and he's a really good communicator. And that's one thing that Mike McDonald's defense really prioritizes. Yeah, maybe hard to you know, notice it from the press box, but certainly when you watch this team in training camp, you will see like everybody at every level of the defense is communicating. And you can maybe see it from the press box, but you can definitely hear it when you watch them like up close up until the ball is snapped. And, you know, the defense is really predicated on pre-snap communication. And, you know, I think that's why sometimes you see teams, you know, try to go quick just to try to maybe negate some of that advantage that Seattle has. But, yeah, Ernest Jones is right in the middle of it. Really good communicator. He's just, you guys know, you covered him for what, half a season, just a really good leader. And, I think you saw him really step up in that role last week. You know, after the game, Sam Darnold had a rough game. And Ernest Jones really kind of like went out of his way to defend his quarterback in a very passionate and even a profane way. And I'm sure that's what the Seahawks kind of thought they were getting. They knew he was a hell of a football player, but like they also knew that he was a really good leader as well.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, they were seeing that twice a year, right, when he was with the Rams. So 100%. Yep. Let's flip it to the other side, because – I want to give Clint Kubiak flowers, man, because what he's done with Sam Darnold, Jackson Smith, and Jigba, and coming out, like, everybody was like, hey, he's just a slot receiver, but you see Smith and Jigba eating on the outside, and a lot of that is part of some of the things that Kubiak has schemed up. Well, what is going on there? Why are they so successful?
Yeah, JSN is having a fantastic year. I think you know, he may have actually fallen off of the pace last week to break Calvin Johnson's single season record. Going into last week's game, he was on pace to beat it by like 2 or 3 yards. And now he's, you know, on pace to finish slightly below that. And that was despite going over 100 yards in that game, which just goes to show the kind of ridiculous production he's given the Seahawks this season. And he has been, I don't want to say exaggerate and say he's been their entire passing game, but he has been a disproportionately big part of it. I think by a wide margin, he leads the NFL in target share. And, you know, I think that was part of the reason why they traded for Rashid Shaheed, is just to get another proven guy in there, a deep threat at that, in case defenses really start honing in on trying to take away JSN. But no one's been able to do it so far. And this is really a continuation of what he started to show last season under Ryan Grubb. And, you know, The Ryan Grubb offense, there was parts of it that worked well. You're just seeing now the difference between an unproven college-style offense that lived out of shotgun. You're seeing the difference between that Ryan Grubb system and a very proven NFL under-center offense, tried and true, which is what Clint Kubiak is running. And, you know, it's kind of a return to some old school football, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, they're under center and it's play action, and you got a fullback back there, and you know, they rely on the, you know, two tight end sets and everything. And they're even doing some tush push in there. Not that that's old school, but just to kind of show you how physical they like to play. And yet they can also throw the ball over your head. And I think with JSN, I think that's a pretty good example of how, you know, 40 speed is different than actual game speed. And you know, I think he was maybe coming off of the hamstring injury, so probably wasn't 100% when he ran that 40 at Ohio State's pro day. But, you know, based on the reports, that was like high 4.4s, maybe even 4.5, which is not remarkable by any means for a wide receiver. And that here he is every week. It seems like you see him running by somebody for a big play.
Yeah, and I tell you, what I really like is with Clint Kubiak, as you mentioned, the under center, the play action. To me, that accentuates what Sam Darnold does well, right? He's, for some reason, is good at flipping his back to the defense, finding where he has to go, and, you know, making it happen. And it's just Kubiak, his dad, right, Gary Kubiak, this is just an extension of what he did back in the day with Denver and with Baltimore. So I love to see it. And one of the other things with Smith and Jigba that I love is, even though he's not playing the slot, a lot of inside releases and getting him, like, on the hashes and working there. So you're still playing to his ability. I'm curious, though, with Cooper Kupp, is it just a matter of there's just not much left in the cup, so to speak? Or is, you know, there are more opportunities for him that should come? What's there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, part of it is just that the ball is just going way more to JSN. And
gotcha.
And you will see, I think there's been times where you see Darnold throw, like, with anticipation to JSN. And I don't know if you necessarily see that with the other receivers. And maybe that just as simple as he knows that JSN is going to get open and you know, be the one to come down with the ball. And maybe he doesn't have that same level of trust with the other guys. I mean, certainly, you know, I doubt that Cooper Kupp has the same level of speed that he did when he entered the NFL in 2017. You know, I think he's pretty much been what they expected him to be, a guy who was, you know, going to be a chain mover and who's going to, you know, best case scenario, probably give you 700-ish yards and going to find the end zone every now and again. And, you know, he is also a guy who he is such a good leader and a good example with, like, how he set the tone with how he works and first guy in, and he's a technician and he's so detail oriented that I think it's fair to say that his value probably goes beyond the bottom line production. But yeah, I mean, he's 32 years old and has some injury issues. He's just at this point of his career, he's a complementary weapon. And I think he's been pretty much what they expected in that regard, but this is very much, you know, it's the JSN show.
And on the way out, Brady, I got to give love and some attention to the offensive line. Gray Zabel, is he someone that you think, and I know it's earlier in the week, but is he someone that you think will be able to give it a go? And if not, Christian Haynes, I mean, I remember him in the draft cycle last year, the UConn offensive lineman. Is there much drop-off from Zabel to him?
Quite a bit. Yeah, quite a bit, I would say. I mean, Zabel has had a fantastic rookie season as the I think he was the 18th overall pick, the Seahawks' highest rated interior offensive lineman, and he's very much played like that. I mean, he's not playing well for a rookie. He's just playing really well overall, especially in the run, but I would say also in the pass, in pass blocking. We don't have a great feel for whether or not he's going to play. I would lean towards probably not.
Wow.
Yeah, just because, you know, it didn't look like he was practicing on Wednesday, and you know, he wasn't able to return to that game. My sense is they err on the side of caution and give him a week off. Now, I mean, it, from the looks of it, when it first happened, it looked like it you know, could be very serious, and they were fortunate to avoid a serious injury. Mm-hmm. And McDonald did call him day to day, but if I had to guess right now, just based off of limited information, I would guess that they give him a week off just to make sure that he's right by the time they play Minnesota the following Sunday.
Yikes. Well, I tell you, that's one area where it could be an issue then, because Jeffrey Simmons and Byron Murphy's teammate at Texas, Tavondre Sweat, they do like to make things happen in the interior part of the D-line. So we'll see there. Either way, Brady, man, make sure you hit me up, man. I appreciate you coming on. You know, make sure you hit me up when you get to town. We'll go ahead and, you know, go step out for a little bit.
Absolutely, TD. It's always good talking to you, and it's always good seeing you in person, my friend. Thank you.
No doubt. No doubt, my man. Safe travel. So that was Brady Henderson. Appreciate him coming on. That's one of my guys right there. I definitely love talking shop with him. So thanks to Brady for coming on. Thanks to Chris Sanders, old fish eye fool, coming on with Run TMC. And above all else, thanks to each of you for tuning in. We definitely appreciate you rocking with us. Check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TV, subscribe, rate, review. We'll